The contents of this page have not been reviewed or endorsed by the Chicago Bulls. All opinions expressed by Sam Smith are solely his own and do not reflect the opinions of the Chicago Bulls or their basketball operations staff, parent company, partners, or sponsors. His sources are not known to the Bulls, and he has no special access to information beyond the access and privileges that go along with being an NBA-accredited member of the media.
Hi, this is Sam Smith, back for Bulls podcast version 2.0. That means I did one last week, and if you can't find it, I think that's kind of excusable because I can't find it either. But it's somewhere on that Bulls.com and Apple, although I'm not sure if it's you're supposed to eat an apple while you're listening to it or go to something that has to do with an apple. You can figure that out because you're all more technically proficient than I am. Anyway, this is the halfway mark of the NBA season, which the NBA tends not to be good in math. So most teams have played about 65% of their games as we head into the All-Star break. And it should be an entertaining, if short, weekend for the Bulls. Joakim Noah will be an All-Star, and he'll be there. How much he plays or whether he plays, and I do expect Joe to be out there. Joe likes a good party like the rest of us, and All-Star Weekend is a great party. So I expect Joe, especially in his first time as an All-Star, and it's a great tribute to him and the team, Tom Thibodeau and his teammates, that Joe, you know, even though he had great success in college, two-time NCAA champion, when he came into the NBA, slept to ninth in the draft, and certainly in the early years with the Bulls in the famed Ben Wallace era, was hardly viewed as an all-star. Similarly with Luol Deng, even though Lou had a great start to his career early on, despite some of the injuries, averaging, I think it was 18.8, second or third year in the league. A lot of trade talk over the years, some of which Lou accuses me of inspiring, but I did not, because as I explained to Lou, when you're in trade talk for Kobe Bryant, that's not a negative. But now with Lou with his second All-Star appearance, and I expect he'll be more active this year. Last year he came in with his wrist injury. Tom Thibodeau and the Bulls coaching staff was there, so as a result they limited his playing time. I think he played only 6 or 7 minutes and obviously had a great weekend, was able to wear his nationalism South Sudan shirt, which I know he was very proud of. And the NBA was graciously permitted. Didn't dance onto the stage, although I'm told he is quite a good dancer. Actually, I've seen him kick around a soccer ball, and he really is light on his feet that way. But it's great to see these two guys who are not your classic isolation, go-to star-type players being honored among all-stars, being an all-star game and being selected. And it's a credit really to the league and to the coaches in a lot of respect, because both Joe and Lou were picked by the coaches after the popular vote, neither one particularly high in the popular vote, which lends itself to more of the marketing stars. But it's a nice endorsement for team play, which I think everybody can be proud of, Bulls fans anyway, regarding the way Tom has coached the team and the way those guys have competed. And then to be recognized for team play, for guys who sacrifice, guys who don't go for their numbers. And we saw Deng earlier this season hit an isolation at the end, winner over Toronto, one of the highlights of the first, at least mathematical half of the season, 41 games. But Lou is not that kind of player, and has always said, and we've seen it in games, willing to give up his scoring. If that's not going to rebound, to move the ball, to play defense. And obviously the same with Noah, who's probably the premier big man in the NBA as far as running the court, hustling, and essentially overachieving. I mean, really, in a lot of respects, nobody in the history of pro ball has ever seen a player like Noah. The combination of a big man who passes the ball, that I know Wilt led the league in assists, but that was mostly because not only Wilt could do anything, or
most anything on a court, but they said he could. But it was mostly out of the post. It wasn't exactly playing through him on the move like Joe plays a lot. And so not only a unique talent, able to do a lot of things, you know, fire out of the backcourt, leading the break full court, which I don't think Thibodeau is a huge fan of, but it's a great advantage for the team. Certainly a guy who shoots the way he shoots. We've never seen that, and certainly never seen the ball go in as frequently. A guy who's worked to shooting up to almost being a 80% free throw shooter this year, which is remarkable with that side-spinning tornado ball. And obviously a reflection of the success the Bulls have had as a team. So I think both those guys, even though they don't talk about it that much because it suggests individual over team, I think they're really proud of what they've accomplished and along with what the team has accomplished. So, but the All-Star Weekend, for the most part, is really kind of an NBA trade show. Dunk contest where the best dunkers in the league are not in it. You know, we'd all like to see LeBron James, as we did with Michael Jordan, who, by the way, is celebrating his 50th birthday, I'm told, is quite the party in Houston. My invitation hasn't arrived yet, but I'm quite sure it will. I'm also quite sure and hopeful, Michael, unlike what Antoine Jameson said the other day, won't be coming back to play at 50, as he threatened during his Hall of Fame ceremony. But Michael always liked to have fun with us. So it's also the three-point contest, which features a lot of shooters, but not the best, given that the league didn't invite Kyle Korver. So it really is a weekend to sell some of the NBA, have a lot of parties, and throw in a game at the end, and not compete too hard to the last couple of minutes, which is okay. It's still a better game than the NFL postseason All-Star game, which gets phenomenal ratings. So people do like the stars, and certainly understandable, and I will be there as well to report on the happenings or non-happenings. And actually, the happenings which at the All-Star break and weekend are more sort of trade-related in a sense. GMs, they used to be more of a confluence of GMs for the meetings there. I don't think they are having those meetings particularly in Houston anymore. Some of the interest will be on the players' side where they make a decision or move toward a decision about their association and Billy Hunter's future. But I think a lot of the NBA and basketball and public interest is going to come down to, of course, as we're bored with every time, what's going on with the Lakers. I mean, it is kind of interesting if you look back toward the beginning of the season. Beginning of the season, obviously, the Lakers were pretty much everybody's favorite to, if not have the best record, or win the title, or some combination there. Oklahoma City, which was in the finals last year, certainly in that discussion. Memphis, to an extent, given they've had their players back healthy for the first time in a couple of years. And obviously, the Spurs, who are always kind of on the edge there, given the fact they were always trying to push him out with Tim Duncan's age. But Tony Parker has really emerged as a MVP, frankly, type candidate. And the Clippers, who really are loaded with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and adding bench guys like Jamal Crawford and Chauncey Billups and Grant Hill, and so probably deepest bench in the league. But, you know, now you look at the circumstances, and much of it financial. Oklahoma City trades James Harden to start the season, and really, you know, you'd say going into the season, even though the Lakers were much, much anticipated, I had Oklahoma City returning to the finals. Now, you know, they played great, but losing Harden, you can't be so sure. Memphis, which has probably had the best start of the season, trades Rudy Gay. San Antonio comes into the break, not having Tim Duncan out with some knee issues leading up to the break, with Manu Ginobili in and out of the lineup all season. So the West has really gotten all very much wide open again, with teams like Denver hot, Houston much better, not considered that level, but obviously much better, and the Clippers in there as well. I think in the East, it's really Miami. I know we've talked, and there's much talk among the Bulls and Bulls fans about the return of Derrick Rose. But it's frankly, at least from my perspective, it's hard to see Derrick coming back and playing a big minutes playoff situation against a team like Miami that's had stability for the last couple of years now, had all their players together, made a couple of nice additions with their perimeter shooting. They've sort of
lollygagged a little bit through the regular season. The famous lollygaggers from Bull Durham, if you know that obscure reference of mine. But when they came down to it, and I think you see this past weekend them pulling away from the Lakers at the end, they look like they're really going to be strong as long as LeBron James is playing at this extraordinary level, which gives no indication that he won't be. It's going to be tough to derail them, much as they look, at least in the – I mean, they're more vulnerable than the Bulls of the 90s because of the lack of size, but they still look like that kind of team that they're going to be very tough to beat. So I think some of the question coming down is what teams are going to do. Obviously, I don't expect Miami to do much. They might be a little shuffling around in the East. You know, the Nets talk about things because they've really underachieved, and Deron Williams went out before the break, and you know he has had a tough season. His standing probably has dropped out of the top 10 point guards in the East. So you know apparently has some injury issues. Says ankle problems. So I think that in the West is where we're going to have to, where we'll look, and obviously with the Lakers might be the biggest question, but it affects several other teams. As you watch them and you see the lack of use Dwight Howard has in the offense, it's really extraordinary to watch. They don't play a pick and roll because Mike D'Antoni likes to have the middle open for movement and driving, and they don't post up Howard. And Kobe Bryant, after kind of calling him out and questioning his injury on some level and denying it then, rarely even looks at him. Last several games leading up to the All-Star break, you could see Kobe playing a lot of isolation and Howard just on the weak side, just kind of standing there, trotting back and forth. And I mean, the Lakers have to, even though nobody said he wouldn't be there and Howard said he likes L.A. and his father got into the conversation and says he thinks he'll resign, the Lakers have to ask themselves, do they want to take this risk where he can walk on them at the end of the season? And I think you'll have to look at a couple of teams that are going to throw offers at him, including the Nets. I mean, the Nets is pretty clear, you know, with their owner. Prokhorov is going to be very aggressive and very generous on that respect. And, yes, Brook Lopez made the All-Star team, but very marginal All-Star level player. I mean, he was obviously added by the commissioner because the Nets were having a good season. But you could see they're not a championship-level team, and I could see them getting back into this hunt with Howard. I mean, I wrote about some of this in my NBA column in Bulls.com on Monday. But, you know, if they put together a package with Deron Williams and Lopez and maybe some draft picks and some pieces, I mean, maybe the Lakers have to listen. Similarly, I think, you know, Atlanta, there's been much rumors about Josh Smith. You know, there was some talk about the Nets are interested. Well, a lot of teams are interested. It doesn't mean you have anything Atlanta would be interested in, but Atlanta might be interested in Howard. He's from Atlanta, grew up there. It's a smaller market, which I think he realizes he needs now after Orlando, which he probably has some regrets for leaving. But Josh Smith was an AAU teammate of his. Lou Williams was an AAU teammate of his, both on the roster. And so maybe you take a shot. And I think, you know, with between Al Horford and maybe Teague and a pick, you know, Lakers probably look at that. I think Houston will want to be in it. My guess is Lakers won't want to trade Howard into the Western Conference and have to deal with them on a regular basis and get into the playoffs. But, you know, with Powell, who I don't expect Pau Gasol to come back this season, unless Howard gets traded, I think if Howard gets traded, I think Powell will have a sudden recovery sometime in March and return. And with Kobe still good for a couple of years, you would have to think, with Gasol, and you had a couple of nice pieces, I think, you know, then you're looking at the Lakers, a serious team again. I could see Houston offering Omer Asik, Jeremy Lin, Chandler Parsons, you know, their concept, you know, sort of similar to Miami. You know, we got one star in James Harden. We get another in Howard. And the interesting part is, you know, when you don't play well, your value gets diminished and very quickly. You know, and now the notion is, well, is Howard a max player? You know, could you play him that? Could you rely on him? Yeah, he is. You know, if you get into the wrong situation, which it is for him, and you don't use. I always remember John Paxson famously back in the late 80s and early 90s with the Bulls, and fans used to complain, you know, Jordan was averaging 35 and Paxson playing with him was averaging like 5. And they said, well, we need more from Paxson. And Paxson used to point out, well, it's hard to average more than 5 with 3 shots a game. On an efficiency basis, he was probably better than Jordan, at least up to 3 shots a game.
So it's the same thing with Howard. I mean, if he gets into a situation where the offense is focused on him and he has another great player, which he never had in Orlando, and that's kind of the difference. I mean, it's almost like Allen Iverson's situation in Philly. Now, it's hard to have another great player with Allen Iverson the way he dominated the ball. Had he had one more high-level all-star player with him, particularly maybe a power forward, or, but more so a shooter who could help spread the court, you know, then maybe he gets that championship. And, you know, so I think Houston looks at it like, we'll give up. We'll just keep Harden, and you can have the rest of the team, which might be very appealing to the Lakers. Dallas, of course, tries to get in these things all the time because, look, they're trying to recover from they won the title and broke up their team. You know, with the idea of if we have cap room and Nowitzki, and we could add a star, but, you know, they fell down, and it's obviously a mistake. It's going to be hard recouping. And, you know, as years, you know, from 1 year to the next, we could see Nowitzki slowing a lot. So I don't see them having much possibilities. And so I don't know that the Lakers want to get into a situation where they're putting Houston into a position where they have to play against them with a great big man and a great small man, sort of like in the mid-90s. So I think, you know, the Howard talk is going to come up. You suspect that the Lakers are probably not bold enough to do something by the deadline next week, right after the Thursday after the All-Star game. They can do a sign-and-trade after the season, and more than likely that's what happened. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, because at that point, now Howard would want the extra money for a sign-and-trade, but you know, he could still walk on them, and then, you know, then that's a huge loss for them, having give up two first-round picks to Phoenix and the Steve Nash deal, also, you know, with losing Howard. So that could set a club back. You know, it's a tough decision. Teams in the NBA tend not to be very bold and sort of wait to the last minute to do things, but it'll certainly be something to watch, especially if the Lakers come out before the break and start lose again, or lose right after the break. Then, like I say, I think, you know, the teams out probably looking, Brooklyn will probably be trying to get in something. Obviously, with the way Boston's played without Rondo, and no, they are not better. You're never better without your star, but things happen. I mean, Rondo does monopolize the ball a lot and takes guys out of it. But you usually have to judge after the first 10 or 12 games when that happens, and hasn't happened yet. You know, with the Pacers, it'll be interesting to see what Danny Granger's due back before too long. They're not a dominant team. They're a very good team. You know, and then as teams get on the edge, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, will Milwaukee do something? Teams like Orlando, where they've mentioned J.J. Redick. Yeah, teams like that just want picks, and a lot of teams don't want to give away number ones for good reason, and Dallas is a great example. And I think they'll probably miss the playoffs this year, and next year their unprotected number one, I think, goes to the Thunder from a previous trade. So you got to be careful with that. It's easy to think you're going to be a championship team. Things don't work out, and then all of a sudden you're in the lottery and someone else has got your pick. And Chicago being one of those with the Tyrus Thomas deal in 2016, the Bobcats potentially to beat the Hornets since the Pelicans are moving into the West next year in New Orleans, would certainly like to get that pick back. And obviously a team I'm going to watch a lot is Phoenix. It was really in free fall. Got some interesting players that teams would like, Gortat and Scola. Really a team that has a bad future ahead of it. In fact, of all the teams with some representation at the All-Star break and the three-point and shooting stars and all that, they basically have the least. The Kings have a lot of those kind of players, but you know, with the potential move to Seattle and new ownership and those issues, you wouldn't think anything would happen there. And Utah, of course, has been mentioned constantly all season of all their free agents, Millsap and Jefferson. But a team to watch interesting, too, is Portland's kind of starting to slip. And, you know, they've got a couple of players of interest, and maybe they want to make some moves. So we're going to start here. And the All-Star break is a great repository for rumors. Since there are mostly reporters around, they talk to each other. And even, as George Karl mentioned a week or so ago, you have to be careful, listen to a lot of this stuff, because he said he used to sit around and make up a good trade. And then, what do you know, it'd be on ESPN before too long. So We don't do it that way here. But anyway, I know you'll be watching. I'll be listening, and I will catch up with you again right after the All-Star break next week, right before the trading deadline, which is that Thursday when the Bulls will be hosting Miami for the second time this season and the first time in Chicago. So we'll look forward to it and look forward to seeing that day. And I don't expect Derrick Rose to be there other than as a spectator like the rest of us. But Bulls have beaten them without him already, and see if they'll do it one more time. All right. Talk to you next week. It's Sam Smith of Bulls.com.